Okay, we're beginning here at the bottom of Pei Bet Amud Bet. We're continuing with the Gemara. The Gemara discussed on the previous daf about Xera Takanas Chachamim that said that Arura Ish Yigadel Chazirim and Arura Adam Shalameda Beno Chachma Yvanit, they were both results of the story in the civil war between Aristobulus and Hukunus of the Bnei Hashmunaim, and because of the event, the Chachamim were metakein at that time that person should not, or one is cursed who brings up Chazirim, and also one is cursed who teaches his son Chachma Yevanit. So the Gemara now is going to challenge that position about Chachma Yevanit. Gemara says, V'chachma Yevanit miyasira. Is Chachma Yevanit really asur to learn? V'atanyo. Amar Rabbi Be'eretz Yisrael. Well, Rabbi says, the Gabi Eretz Yisrael, Loshon Sursi Lama. What do I need, or Lama? What is Loshon Sursi for? What is this language of Sursi worthwhile for? O Loshon HaKodesh, O Loshon Yevanit. If you want better, clearer, more proper languages, then either use Lashon HaKodesh, use Hebrew, or Lashon Yevanit, or use Greek. Either of those are a better alternative to Lashon Sursi. Lashon Sursi doesn't seem reasonable or necessary. Rami Rabbi Yossi Bavel, Lashon Arami, Lama. Or Lama. In Bavel, what do I need the Lashon of Aramit? What do I need Aramaic for? O Lashon HaKodesh, O Lashon Parsi. Over there, either speak Hebrew or speak Persian. Both of those languages are better, clearer, more exacting Lashonot, and so why would one be metapel? Why would one learn Lashon of Aramit, since it does not live up to the quality of either of the languages of Lashon HaKodesh or Lashon of Parsi? Tosus over here discusses what this Lashon Sursi is, and Tosus actually says he thinks that Lashon Sursi and Lashon Aramit are actually synonymous. They're both the same language. They're Aramaic. So why did the Gemara switch the Lashonot of Lashon Sursi and Lashon Parsi, and Lashon Aramit? It's because, depending where you are, they were different dialects of Aramaic. There was a dialect of Aramaic that was in Bavel, and that was called Aramit, and then there was a dialect of Aramaic that was found in Eretz Yisrael, and actually he says in Syria, that's where the word Sursi comes from. It came from Syria, from Aram Tzova and Aram Naraim, and that's the Aramit, and that dialect of Aramit was called Sursi. So they're both Aramaic, and based on that, the difference between them is simply a dialect of Aramaic, and now the difference between the two Lashonot, why in Eretz Yisrael they said Yvanit as the alternative language, and why in Bavel did they use the alternative as Parsi, is Rashi points out, that's because it depends where you're closer to. Eretz Yisrael, which is closer, probably more influenced by the Greeks or the Greek Empire. So for that, he said a choice is either Hebrew or Greek. Those are more developed, better languages to use. When it came to Bavel, which was closer to the Persian Empire, or was actually part of the Persian Empire at times, there they said, oh, the choices are either Persian or Hebrew, but not Aramit. So either case, it's not Aramit. But what do you see from this? That you could learn, or you should learn, Lashon Yevanit, where Ma'adif Lashon Yevanit over Lashon Sursi. How could it be? We just said before, you can't teach your children Chachma Yevanit. Well, the answer is obvious. One is talking about Chachma Yevanit, and one is talking about Lashon Yevanit, and that's what the Gemara says. Imri, Lashon Yevanit Lachud, Chachma Yevanit Lachud. That when you're talking about the language of Yevanit, that's by itself, and the Chachma Yevanit, right, we're talking about Chachma Yevanit, that is also independent. Now, what is this Chachma Yevanit? It seems to be that it's some language of the royalty or language of the aristocracy. It wasn't a language that was used by the common people, but a language that was reserved for the aristocratic echelons of society, and involved nuanced and signed language that was spoken by a few. So that's where the Gemara says that you shouldn't teach your children this Chachma Yevanit. And the Gemara challenges that. But even Chachma Yevanit mi asira. Since when is Chachma Yevanit really asur? That my eyes well up or cry from myself over that which is those that were from the children of my city. There were 1,000 children in the house of my father. No, it was literally in the house or Beis Medrash or the city of my father. 500 of them learned Torah, 500 of them learned Chachma Yevanit. The only people left of those 1,000, there are only 2 left, myself, Uben Achi Abba, right, the son of my father's brother, basically my first cousin, Ba'atsiyah in Asia. So only 2 of us left out of all those 1,000s. But what do you see? You see that they taught the children Chochma Yevanit. So Imre, the Gemara says, Shiny Beit Rabbi Gamliel, Shayu Krovim the Malchut. Oh, you're talking about Beit Rabbi Gamliel. They were Nisim in Eretz Yisrael, and it was necessary for them to interact with the political echelons of the, whether it was the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, but they had to be involved with the interaction with these aristocratic echelons of society, and because of that, they had to know how to communicate. They had to know how to engender themselves to the rulers so that they could help out the Jews. So when it comes to Beit Rav Gamliel, that's an exception because they were Kovi L'machlot. Uchedetanya, and like we have a Braisa, that when it comes to being a political liaison or helping out the Jews in terms of a political necessity, there we suspend some of the gzeirot. For instance, I'm a seper kumi, harizeh mitarchei amori. One who cuts his hair on the derech of a kumi, right, that is mitarchei amori. What exactly this kumi is, Rashi brings two interpretations. One is that they cut all the hair in the front. I mean, the front of the head, from the forehead back, they cut all the front of the hair. And from the back of the head, they used to pull out a huge ponytail. That was a misaper kumi. That's one possibility. The other possibility is the derech haromai. He brings down that the Romans had a way of cutting the hair straight across the top of the ear, something I think more popular in the more recent days. People shave off the side of the head, including the peyote, all the way across, and there's a line of shaving that goes across to the back, thinner or longer. So either of these are considered misaper kumi. This misaper kumi is mizaydache mori, but of Tulumus Baru Uvein, he too allowed the saper kumi. He was allowed, he was Jewish, and they allowed him to cut his hair in such a manner, because he was involved with the political echelons of society, and he had to interact with them, so he wanted to cover up the fact that he was Jewish. He didn't want it to appear Jewish in front of them. He was able to help the Jews by being involved in the government or being their political liaison, as long as he dressed and he acted like them, so they permitted him to saper kumi. And Shabbat Rav Gamliel to learn the saper b'chachma yivanit. And in Shabbat Rav Gamliel, they gave permission that they could speak chachma yivanit b'shukavrim the malchut. Again, they had interactions with the malchut, and because of that, it was necessary for them to do that. As Tosus points out here, that mitchila lo gazru al krovim the malchut. In all these gezerot, it wasn't a suspension of the gezerah, but when the gezerah was put into place, it was put in place with the exception of those that were necessary for political interactions. So that's the end of the sugya here. The sugya is also found in Menachot and Sota and other places where the Gemara discusses the sugya. There are some Rishonim that talk about the issue of Chachma Yevanit in terms of whether Chachma Yevanit influenced some of the Rishonim. For instance, the Rambam, who is very influenced by Greek philosophy, Aristotelian philosophy. So there's some Rishonim that are critical of the Rambam and others who were influenced by Chachma Yevanit. And here you see the Gemara tells us that we're not permitted to delve into or to be involved with Chachma Yevanit. And obviously, according to them, the Chachma Yevanit is not simply a language, but also it sounds like an etiquette or a mannerisms or a philosophy that they got involved with in order to interact with these non-Jews. And for that, they criticized the Rambam and other Rishonim who had been involved in Chachma Yevanit. All right, now moving on, our Mishnah continues. Right, a person should not bring up a dog unless it has a leash on it. Unless it has a leash on it, you can put it on that on a city that is close to the border. But you have to keep it chained up or leashed during the day, and at night you let it go loose for protection, so that the border town is not invaded or perpetrated by the enemy. Lezer Agadol says that when you bring up dogs, it's as if you're bringing up pigs. We already said it's asur, and it's asur to bring up chazirim, it's asur to bring up klavim. What's the difference? Mekemalei barur. Well, no, there's a more extensive language. The Mishnah has a much more extensive language when it comes to bringing up pigs. There it says, Arua Aishi Agadel Chazirim. The cursed is the one who brings up Chazirim. So if you compare a kelev without a leash to a chazir, then it says that not only is it an isur, but there's also an arur that's associated with that one should be cursed. So that's what the Gemara says. My nafkamina make him a leba arur, that he also have an arur associated with it. Amar Rav Yosef bar Minyuni, Amar Rav Nachman, Bavel ki iras mucha lesfar dami, that a Bavel is like a city on the edge of the border, our border town. So first of all, as Rashi points out, Bavel is a country, not a city. So the way Rashi interprets it is that the country's name is Bavel, and the ear and a significant city that he is speaking about in this case is Nardah. That Nardah, which is the city of Rav Nachman, is like a city that is on the border. Why? Because Nardah was a predominantly Jewish city that was surrounded by non-Jews. So since it was a predominantly Jewish city surrounded by non-Jews, it was equivalent to being a border town, and therefore it had the same exceptions like border towns in Eretz Yisrael, that they could have dogs that they were allowed to let out at night for protection. The other possibility is to read that Bavel is Gir Smuchel Esfardami, means that all of Bavel, not just Nardah, not just the specific cities, but when you live in foreign land, not in Eretz Yisrael, then even when there is a significant Jewish presence in areas, they are always surrounded by non-Jews. If that's the case, then every town or every place where the Jews are together or have a large community, they still are considered like a border town, and therefore they're permitted to have dogs, again, to be leashed up during the day and let out at night for protection. Right, so when they rest, when the Mishkan comes to rest, Hashem Shechina is Shore on Rivavot Alfei Yisrael. What is the Rivavot? Rivavot, Rivava is 10,000, so Rivavot in plural will be 20,000. Alfei Elef is 1,000, so in plural Alfei, the minimum would be 2,000, so that's 22,000. That the Shechina is not Shore on Klal Yisrael with less than 22,000 people. Now, as Tosfos points out, we know that the Gemara in Sanhedrin mentions that afilu kol be'asara in Mishnah Avot, that any 10 people even that come along together, that the Shekhinah is shore on them. So Tosfos says that this is a different level. Here we're talking about 22,000, talking about the Shekhinah is shore legabe neviut, I mean the fact that there could be a Navi, there's a communication with Hashem, that Hashem communicates with Klai Yisrael, and that the Shekhinah is shore on the Mishkan. This is a different level of Shekhinah, Shriyat HaShekhinah on Klai Yisrael versus the Shriyat HaShekhinah we're talking about when the 10 people get together for a minion. That type of Shriyat HaShekhinah is a lower level. This we're talking about a level in which Hashem's presence is always there and that He communicates with Klal Yisrael. The Mishkan, that requires 22,000. So now say you have 22,000, Choser Achat. Vayitah Yisham Uberet Benayim. There were 22,000 minus 1, and there was a woman who was pregnant, Ruya Lashlim, and that she would have given birth to the 22,000th person and caused the Shekhinah to be shoret. But Navach Bakelev, and a dog barks at her, V'ipila, and because of the bark or the scare from the dog, she miscarries the baby. Nimsa Zeh Goyen L'Shekhinah Shetelik Misrael, that this person who owned this dog, the owner of this dog, now has caused that there will no longer be a Shekhinah Yisrael, because we were about to have our 22,000th, where the Shekhinah be shoret, and now the miscarriage causes that there will not be a 22,000th person. Nimsa Zeh Goyen L'Shekhinah Shetelik Misrael, Ayi Itata, the Alon Meifa Bahau Beita, there was a woman who went up, got permission, had borrowed her friend's oven and went up to bake bread in their house. Navach Bakalvo, the dog barked at her. Amala Amare, the owner of the dog, said, don't worry, lo tistafe mine, don't be afraid, em shakul nibe. We took out, my Rashi learns it's nibe, nibe are his incisors, the four large canines that he has. We've taken them out already, so he's not going to hurt you. Amale shkuli tuvatech, v'shad yachizre, take your good wishes or your good thoughts and throw them out into the thorns, into the bushes. Farnavalad, it's too late. I mean, the dog already barked, I was already scared. It's either, I don't know if it means that she literally miscarried or that the baby moved somehow and that was detrimental, but whatever damage, the damage is done already. The fact that you tell me now that the dog doesn't have its canines is not going to help. All right, the last thing mentioned in the Mishnah was Ein Porsin Nishvim LeYonim. You can't put out traps for the doves. In the Mishnah, it says unless you have a distance of 30 ris. 30 ris, Rashi says, is 4 Roman miles. They have a distance before you place out the traps. Umi Azle Kulehai. The Gemara wants to know, wait, do doves really fly this far? V'hatnan. Don't we have a Mishnah? Marchikin et Hashovech v'ne'ir chamishim mama. That when you want to set up your dove coats, you only have to move 50 amot outside of the city. 50 amot out of the city is much less than 4 mil. Zamar Abaye, Mishat Shait to Tuva. Now that's a difference. We're talking about two different things. When you're talking about flying, doves can reach much further. I mean, doves will fly up to 4 mil. But when Karsayu, when we're talking about their eating, and that's what the problem is with putting up your shovech, putting up your dove coats outside of the city, that's b'chamishim amah amalia. They'll fill up their bellies. They can eat enough or sufficient within 50 amot. So the problem with the 50 amot, or why you have to put your dove coats outside of the city, is because we don't want the doves eating from the tevuah, or the plantings, or the fields of the city. So we say distance it 50 amot so that they don't come and eat from the city. That's enough distance so that they'll eat sufficiently before they reach any of the property of the people of the city. On the other hand, when you're talking about capturing a dove that doesn't belong to anyone else, then you have to distance yourself much further, which is you have to go out to Shalosh Yamim, 4 mils, so that you don't capture doves that belong to anybody else, because they do fly longer distances. Mar says, Vatanya, oh, is that really true? Misha Chai, Shalosh Yamim are too low. They only fly 30 ris, meaning 4 mil and no more. Vatanya, Bishuv, Afilu Me'a Mil, Lo Yifros. When it comes to celled areas, one cannot put out a trap for a dove, even for 100 mil. So it sounds like they fly or they move much further. Now, the question about whether mea mil is the literal or whether it's just figurative, meaning that mea mil means literally 100 mil, or generally when the Gemara uses large numbers like this, it's just a exaggeration or figurative term. That means it doesn't matter how far you go, no matter what. Tosfos deals with both those languages. We'll come back to it in a second. So I feel mea mil, lo yifros, Rav Yosef, mar bishuv kramim. That depends where. If you're talking about large areas of tracts of vineyards, then the birds will hop from vineyard to vineyard and they'll continue to fly much further along. Rabba Mishuv Shuvchim, or dealing with areas where there are large sets of dovecotes. In those areas, then the doves will move much further out than the normal 30 ris. Wait a minute, if the problem here is that you have a whole area of dovecotes and you're setting up your traps, what's the problem? I mean, you're trapping the animal. It clearly belongs to someone from the dovecote. What are you worried about the animals flying away from long distances? The problem here is that you're stealing from someone else's dovecote. Where it says, it belongs to a non-Jew. These are dovecotes that are independent, not really owned. They're free. It's his own dovecotes. Right? So that those... dovecotes are his. If he doesn't want to capture in his traps his own birds, he should move them out further. The question about Ovid Kochavim, the Gemara will deal with, the Gemara coming up in Bava Kamma will deal with what's the din of Nezek and stealing from a Ovid Kochavim, which is obviously part of the issue here. We'll have to deal with that later. Hefker and Didei are self-explanatory. Now, Tosos says, in the end, now what are we going to do? If you say that Yishuv means, anytime there's an Yishuv, that it means even 100 mil, then wherever you're going to put a dovecote, there's no place to put a dovecote. If you say it means anywhere, 100 mil is figurative, not literal, that means that there's nowhere you can put a dovecote. On the other hand, if you believe that it's literal, right, that it's 100 mil, then how are you going to explain the brisa? Because the brisa says, the risha is, don't, ketani rachok shloshim rishmina yishiv porsim. And then the sefer says, I feel a kuf mil lo yifros. Right, so then you can have both sides of it. How do you explain it? So Tosos in the end, if you look at towards the end, it's the wide lines of Tosos. Veneer l'ritzba, the vade sakadatka da'ir b'yishuv zra'im. The havamin of the Gemara was that we're dealing with yishuv zra'im, areas where there are planted vegetation. V'achi perishom mishat shaitish lo simris v'tulo. It only flies 30 ris and no more. V'afilu b'yishuv zra'im. Even when there's plantation or vegetables or vegetation in those areas, v'amuch ha'seifa, the yishuv zra'im shaiti tuva. We know from where the places are planted that they fly much further. V'en l'zeh mishum achila. And that's only because of eating. And so you see that doesn't fill up after 50 amot. That we're dealing with, no, not areas of vegetation. When we talk about yishuv, we mean yishuv kremim and yishuv shofchim. So those areas, you don't fill up. So there will be a difference. Yishuv, which is considered settled areas, those settled areas mean when there's large tracts of vineyards or large tracts of dovecotes. In those areas, the animals will either eat for longer distances or travel longer distances, so you can't trap them in those areas. Whereas in the midbar doesn't literally mean a midbar. Midbar means areas that don't have large tracts of vineyards or large tracts of shofchim, of dovecotes. In those areas, there's a limited span in which the birds will fly. They'll fly up to 30 ris. They'll eat up to 50 amot. In those areas, you don't have to worry. Once you're beyond the 30 ris area, that whatever you're capturing, you can assume you are capturing from hefker. So that's the end of the 7th parak. Now we'll begin the 8th parak. Until now, the Gemara has really dealt with, excluding the 7th parak, the first 6 parakim, we really dealt with Hezek Mamon, where your money goes out and does damage. So we talked about Shor, which is Shane, Regal, and Karen, Bor, Mave, right, Hever. We talked about Eish. We talked about all those things that revolve around the damage done by your mamon. Then we came to the 7th parak, and we then wrote Kefel and Arba v'Chamisha. Now, the 8th parak can do with a Chovel, which is actually Adama Mazik, a person that does damage. So here we're going to deal with it. A Chovel b'Chovero, a person who does damage, Chayav, Alav Mishum Chamisha Dvarim. A person does damage to another individual has to pay 5 things. What are those 5 things? Nezek, damage, star, pain, ripoy, doctor's bills, Shevet, unemployment or disability, Boshet, and embarrassment. Smart says, how do I know this? Benezek, Kate said, how do I play for Nezek? I mean, Rashi actually explains, where do we all know these items from? By Nezek, we know because it says Ayin Tachar Ayin, which we're going to see the Gemara is going to darshan. Ayin Tachar Ayin means that you have to make monetary compensation and not that you take an eye for an eye. Petza Tachat Petza teaches me that tsar, that you have to pay for pain, a wound under for another wound. And then ripoy and shevet, we learn out from the pasuk that says rach shivto yitain virapo yirape. Right, so these are found, all those psukim right now are found in Shmot, Perchaf Aleph, and Pershet Mishpatim. In Pasuk Yutet, it says, you're chayav to pay for the unemployment disability, and repo yirape, and for the doctor's bills. Later on, in Pasuk Chav Gimel, in the same Perek, it says, nefesh tachat nefesh. Then the Pasuk continues, ayin tachat ayin, which teaches us nezek, shein tachat shein, yachat tachat yad, regel tachat ragel. Then the next one is, kviyat tachat kviyat, petza tachat patza, chabura tachat parura. So that petza tachat petza teaches about tsar. What the other items teach about, the Gemara will get to in a little bit. Now the Gemara Mishnah is going to discuss how do you assess these different types of damage. So when it comes to Nezek, Ketzat, Simeteino, Katet, Yado, Shiberet, Raglo, he blinded him, took out his eye, cut off his arm, somehow maimed him, that he took off his leg. We assess him based on the marketplace value of such an individual. We see as if he's a eved, a slave that's being sold in the marketplace. Before he was damaged, how much would this individual be worth as a slave? Meaning, what is his work value? And now, how much is he worth when he's missing such a limb? That determines how much the nezek is. It's a pretty clear rate. That's the present value of all the damage done by having this person be missing a limb. Because a person who's going to buy such an eved knows that either the arm will never be there if it's totally cut off, or if it's damaged and will be healed, then he's buying the eved with the knowledge that it will take time before it heals and before it gets better. So he's paying for that value or the lack of value. So he knows when a person's missing such a limb, we know how much they cost in the shuk and then in the open market. And the open market for a person who is whole. So the difference between them is the nezek, is the damage that you cause. Tsar, how do you assess tsar pain? Kiva'o. Bishibuda masmer, he took a some sort of steak that was boiling hot, a metal steak or skewer, or masmer, or nail, and he touched it. Even onto his nail, makom sheino sechabru, a place where it doesn't cause any permanent damage that it will rego. We look at an individual and say, how much would a person be willing to accept monetarily in order to undergo this type of pain? How much you have to pay for an individual? How much would they be willing to suffer through this pain and be compensated for that? So again, it's somewhat subjective, but it seems to me that you have to go out and assess how much monetary value it has associated with this pain, independent of the damage. Now, ripui, how do you pay for ripui? If he damages him, he has to pay for the doctor bills in order to help him get back to his health. If there's a growth that goes on him, whether it's I don't know if it's a scar, a scab, but it sounds more here like that you have infections or bacterial growth on him that come up on him, fungus of sorts. If it's because of the wound or the damage that you did to him, then you have to compensate or you have to pay the doctor bills to cure him from that. If it's independent of the damage that you did him, then of course you are patur. If he starts to get healthier and then he fell back, or if he started to get healthy and fell back again and again, your obligation is to cure him or ensure that he returns to his normal health, meaning to full health. So again, if you cure him, he had the doctor take care of him, he got back to his full health. After that point, you are free. You don't have to anymore pay for his doctor bills because you brought him to the point of health where he was beforehand. Shevet. What is Shevet? Unemployment disability. So you're talking about unemployment. You already paid for that. Why? Because a person missing an arm is less employable than a person that has an arm. And that you already assessed when you went to say, how much will a person pay for an eved in the shuk with an arm or without an arm? So now what are you doing? Well, there's a separate point of disability or unemployment, which is that even when you're missing an arm, a person could have worked. At that point, he could have been a guard in the field to shoo away the birds or watch the animals don't come. A simple job that has payment. In that instance, he has to pay for the disability of him unable. At this point, he's unable to do any sort of work, not even light work. So again, the Nezek assessed what's the differential in value between his previous employability versus his current employability. But now we have to also assess he's unemployable legamer. He's unable to do anything. So that Shevet that you're paying for right now is what the lower form of employment that he could have taken at this point. He's not even able to do that. And you have to pay him for that disability or that unemployment. The last thing is Boshet. Right? Boshet akodufi hamilbayesh vamitbayesh. Boshet is all subjective. It has to do with the status of the individual who got damaged or hurt and the status of the individual who's doing the hurting. That's Rashi points out the different permutations of people. An Adam Chashuv gets hurt by a Adam Pachut, right? If you have someone who's a degenerate that hurts or does damage to a person who is of high stature, obviously there's more embarrassment than two people of equal or peers socially. So that has to do with the boshet is determined by how much of the status of each individual involved in the case. So Gemara says, Amai, how do you know that when you do damage to someone, you have to compensate them with monetary means? Right? The pasuk says ayin tachad ayin. The pasuk in Shmot Perchav Aleph pasuk Chav Dalet says ayin tachad ayin. So Amar Rachmana im ayin mamash. Who says that you have to pay money? Why don't you take an eye for an eye, literally? One eye for one eye. Lo salkadatcha. Can't be this way. Tanya yachol simat eino misamet eino. You would think if you cause someone else to be blind, that they'd have to remove your eye. If you cut off a person's arm, then they remove your arm. If one took off or hurt or maimed the leg of another individual, b'shabet raglav, break your leg. Tamar omer makeh adam u'makeh be'ema. There's a makah, right? We talk about makah by adam, makah be'ema. Ma makah be'ema the tashlumim. Just like when you hit an animal or you do damage to an animal, it's clear that we don't damage you. We don't do something in retribution towards you, but rather you pay or compensate for the damage to the animal. Af makeh adam l'tashlumim. Also to a... By makeh adam, when you do damage to a person, you have to do it or repay it through compensation. So Mar says, v'im nafshu chalumar. If you prefer, I have a different limud. Hari Omer. It says, by the psukim of Arei Miklat and Rotzeach that are found in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Hey, there the pasuk says in pasuk Lamed Aved, lo tichu chofer lenefesh Rotzeach asher hu rasha lamut ki mot yumat. You're not allowed to take compensation in place of having this person die because he killed another individual. You're not allowed to take kofre, you're not allowed to take any money to replace or to instead of him being put to death. And the pasuk right after also, lo tichu kofer lenu selir miklato. You also can't take kofer for a person not to run to an Arei Miklat. So when it says that, it says, lo tichu lenefesh Rotzeach asher hu lamut lenefesh Rotzeach yata lokeach kofer. You can't take compensation in place of the death penalty of alata lokeach kofer the sheverim she'en chuzrim. But the diuk from that pasuk is that you may take compensation or kofer in place of Rosh Avarim when you do damage to someone's limbs. Then you may do that even though they may not return. That you do have the ability to take kofer. So the Gemara says, hi Maka, what Maka? When you said there's a Gzera Shava, which it sounds like Maka Adam Maka Behema, what are you talking about? Ilema, if you say it's from the pasuk in Vayikruch of David, Maka Behema Yishalmenu, where it says that when you pay for Behema Yishalmenu, Umaka Adam Yumat, but if you hit a person, he'll die. That's in Perek of David, pasuk Chav, it says, Maka Behema Yishalmenu, Umaka Adam Yumat. Right, so if that's the case, how biktalaktiv? That's speaking about the death penalty, right? It's clear. It says, makeh adam yumat. If you hit a person, you're going to die. The only time you're going to die when you hit a person is if you actually kill them. So it must be that the makeh beima yishalmen over there is not, you can't say that that makeh draws any either gzera shavar smuchim there, because we're not talking about makeh adam, we're talking about injuring an individual. There you're talking about killing an individual. El mehacha must be from another pasuk in Vayichach of Dala just beforehand. It says, makeh nefesh beima yishalmenu, nefesh tachat nefesh. If you do damage to an animal, then you must replace the animal, or you must compensate for the loss. V'samechle, and right after that pasuk, it says in pasuk Yutet, ish kiten mum bamito kasher asa ken yaselo. If you put a mum, if you put a damage or a some sort of scar or blemish into an individual, kasher asa ken yaselo. Whatever you did, that's what we do to you. So now, v'ish kiten mum bamito kasher asa ken yaselo. I love. Makeru. Right, that sounds nice. That's really nice because you have Makeru, Behemesh Behema Yishalmenu, which is compensating for Adam. And it's clear that the next case, Yutet, is talking about Ish Kiten Mumba Mito, talking about damage, not about death. Kasher Yasek, Ken Yaselo. So that's nice. So you have damage of Behema, and then you have damage of Adam. Just like with damage of Behema, you compensate. Damage by Adam, you also compensate. Problem is that our brace has said it comes from Makeru Adam, Makeru Behema. Sounds like there is a Gzeira Shova. Now, the Tosus deals with that, and the Tosus, the first Tosus of Nala, deals with whether this is Darshim Mismuchim or Gzeira Shova. The Re insists that the Drusha here is a Drusha of Gzeira Shova, and therefore he eliminates some of the Girsay. He wasn't willing to say Vesamichle. He didn't want to say that right next to it it's written, because he says it's not a Din in Smuchim, it's a Din in Gzeira Shova. So then the question is then, in the conclusion of the Gemara, which we're about to get to right now, Gemara says, Haka Kamrinon, I'm in hitting. Hitting is hitting, meaning that not literally the word makeh, but rather haka'a. Here, in one case, we're talking about makeh behema, makeh nefesh behema. There, you're hitting or hurting an animal. Now, very ishkiten mumba mito. Even though the word makeh is not literally written, it's still haka'a. It's still a form of hitting, we know. And that's what I meant, makeh, makeh. So, according to Tosus, that conclusion of the Gemara is either one of two items. One possibility is that it remains exera shava, and the Gemara is still using makeh, makeh as exera shava, but not literally makeh. Or, inami, that there really goes. The Gemara now is switching to smuchim, that it is actually a smuchim here. Makamara. Just like haka'a by a behema is talking about compensation, monetary compensation, also haka'a as written by Adam is l'tashlumim. Again, whether it's a gzera shavu or smuchim, either way now we have a correlation or connection between makeh nefesh behema and an Adamu damages. And just like behema, you pay monetary compensation, so too by Adam you do, or you will pay monetary compensation. V'aktiv, doesn't the pasuk say, right? Ish ki akeh kol nefesh adam mot yumat. Wait a minute. Right over there we have a pasuk which says right before it in pasuk yizayin, v'ish ki akekol nevesh adam mot yumat. If you hit any person, right, mot yumat. So it sounds like the havami of the Gemara here is mot yumat means that you'll have to meet yakekol nefesh adam is not really killing, but rather that you hurt an aver, some limb of a person. Mot yumat means that you have to remove or hurt that aver when the person who caused the damage. So Gemara says, no problem, mamon. No, that's talking about monetary compensation. My bit of mamon. How do you know it's talking about monetary compensation? Emo v'mita mamash. Let's say it's talking about real death here. Losakadatcha, real death, again, means taking another limb out of him. Losakadatcha, chado. I wouldn't think this one is the height kishta maka be'ima, yishalmenu. That we just said, that we just murdered, the next pasuk is maka nefesh be'ima yishalmenu. And we saw already that, right, that's muhim, or that Gzeir Shava teaches us that we're talking when a maka adam, you don't take a limb, but you rather compensate with mamon. Vod, k'tiv b'chei, k'ashay ten mum b'adam, k'ni natein bo. Right, we have the pasuk, two pasukim later, which says, ish ki ten mum b'amito, k'ashay aser, k'ni aser lo. That's clearly talking about damage to adam, and we just had a limud that taught us that that's monetary compensation, shvamina mamon, that it must be mamon, that it's monetary compensation over here. Just the Re does not agree to this girsa, this whole piece of the Gemara, where the Gemara challenges from Ishki Akekol Nefesh Adam Motumat. Re says that that girsa doesn't make many sense here, because number one is Ki Akekol Nefesh Adam, already we do establish in other places in Shas, we say Ishki Akekol Nefesh Adam Motumat is really talking about death. It's not talking about doing injury, but really literally about death. And number two, from Mamon, we don't need it. We already have the next two psukim, which teach us that there is monetary compensation. So, if that's the case, what's, why is there anything better here? This krah, with this pasuk that we ask, Ishke Akel Nevesh Adam Mochumat, why is that any different than ayin tachat ayin? An eye for an eye. If we're willing to say if an eye for an eye is mamon, based on the smichut or the gzer shava, maken nefesh beima, and Ishke ten mumba mitoka share sekin yaselo, then why can't we say the same thing by pasuk yuzayin of Ishke Akel Nevesh Adam Mochumat? Right? We can make the same imposition on that pasuk as we do on ayin tachat ayin, number one. And number two is that that pasuk really is talking about true death, killing of an individual, and this is not our discussion here. Our discussion here is injury, causing injury to other people. So Tosfos in the end over here says that doesn't seem to make any sense, and therefore the Re wipes out all the gears of the Gemara from the question of the Gemara on Bahaktiv until the next question of the Gemara, which we're about to read now. Umayim Napshakolamar. And the Brisa, we brought two sources for the fact that when you injure another individual, one injures another individual, that the compensation for that is not an eye for an eye, but rather monetary compensation. One of them is, we said, makeh adam u makeh beima. This either smichut or gzer shava of makeh nevish beima. Two, ish ki ten mum bamito kasher yisrael kenes elo. The other one we brought was from rotzeach. By death penalty, there we said you're not allowed to take kofar instead of the death penalty. But we said, medayik from that's only by rotzeach. But by damage, you would be able to take kofar. So Mar says, Tuka kasha letano. The Kana had a question, and this is why he brought a second limo down. My chazit yafot mimaka behema, lilif mi yemake adam. Now you drew a smichut, or you learned down from make behema to make adam. Why don't we say, learn it out from make adam itself? Right, we have other cases, for instance, ish ki akeh kol nefesh adam mot yumat, right? And we have also later on the pasuk, make adam yumat. So we see in all these cases, makeh by adam is yumat. So death. Of course, we're not going to give you the death penalty if one takes out the eye of an individual, but death could be the equivalent of taking literally ayin tachat ayin. So why are you comparing it to behema? Compare it to adam. So imrei dani nizakin min nizakin vein dani nizakin min mita. We're talking about, you want to make a comparison, we say go to behema. Behema is talking nezek. When you do damage to behema, even if you kill a behema, that's the ultimate form of nezek by a behema. It's only nezek that we're talking about. When you're talking about a human being, so you have nezek. So you want to compare cases of nezek to cases of nezek. We don't want to learn nezek from miso. The other cases, when you have maker, yakeb, adam, all those cases are cases where the person's put to death. He kills one and kills a different individual, an individual, and then he's put to death. That's not a comparable case. You don't want to look at the death versus nizakin versus damage. So Mar says, adrabo, donim adam adam, donim adam behema. Well, there's another logical argument, which is I should learn out human compensation from humans rather than from animals. Animals are their own category. So why are you learning about damages of Adam from Behemah? I should learn out Adam. Even though we're talking about death, at least it's within the same species. It's within the same category of Adam. So that's Hani Dektani Im Nafshe Cholomar. So he says, if you don't accept my either Gzeira Shava or my Smuchin between Behemah and Adam, I'll give you another reason. Hari Omer, Lo Tichu Kofer LeNefesh Rotzeach Asher Rasha Lamut Ki Mot Yumat right? So he has to die. The nefesh would say, "Achi atal okeach." You're not to take kofar when it comes to in place of the death penalty. Kofar aval atal okeach kofar l'sheverim shenan chozrin. You're allowed to take it for damage that's done. Even if it's permanent damage, you're allowed to take kofar. You're allowed to take monetary compensation. Mar says, "Vaylo tichu kofar l'nefesh utzeach l'mutei l'sheverim hudato." Is that what the limud is for? We need it for something else. Why? Hami bayle damar rachmana lo tavid bei tarte. Don't punish him twice. Mamon mean that he does have the death penalty. You would think maybe he gets the death penalty and has to pay kofar. He has to get kaparat. He has to compensate also. He has to pay money. So that's what the Torah says. Don't take kofar in the place where he's going to be put to death. I mean, he's only put to death and he does not have to compensate or pay money. The Gemara says, well, I can learn that out. I already learned that from somewhere else, which is in Devarim Chavdei, it says k'dei rishato, that you only get punished for the rishato, the bad that you did, the sin or the violation that you did. You're only going to be punished once and not twice. There's no double jeopardy. For the same crime, you can only receive one punishment. That one punishment is the death penalty. We're not going to make you compensate. Also, you can't be punished for the same crime twice. Whereas there's a katami baile, I still need lo tichu. I need it for the pasuk shot in the pasuk, which is you're not allowed to take kofar to then get out of the death penalty. Lasher hu rasha lamut. Right, then you could just say, look for lasher nefesh. What do you have this extra nefesh rotzeach? Right, you could have skipped the right. You could have skipped some of the words. You say look tichu kofer lasher hu rasha lamut. What's this extra word of nefesh rotzeach here? Why is that? What is the qualification of nefesh rotzeach in the pasuk? The nefesh rotzeach lamalish ma'mina. The nefesh rotzeach yatalokeach kofer v'talokeach kofer lasher verim shenan chozrin. Now it comes to teach us that kofer is the restriction against taking kofer or monetary compensation is unique or only applicable by the death penalty, but it's not applicable by damage, even permanent damage. Mar says, all right, v'ichar dechtiv lo tichu kofer maka maka lamali. All right, if you know that, that solution sounds like a great solution, then what do I need makeh makeh? What do I need the other limud for at all? Meaning that now I would have known from lo tichu kofer that I can take compensation when it comes to ayin k'dachet ayin. Eye for an eye is not literal, it's monetary compensation. So now what do I need the hekesh or the smichus of makeh behemah to makeh adam? Mar says, wait a minute, well, that we do, because I would have had a have. I mean, if I learned it at lo tichu kofer, that says, don't say compensation for the death penalty. On the other hand, you can take compensation for the damage. The important word there is can, right? So Imri, Imi, hi, had I just had that, have a mina, Ibaye no native, Ibaye deme no native. I have a choice. I can either have him compensate me for the damage, or can I have his eye taken out. I mean, it's my choice. Kofar is a choice. It's a reshut. So that's what comes along. Kamashman mi beima. Just like Bayema, there's only one solution. There's only one punishment. That punishment is that compensation. Also over here, also by Adam, it's not like you have a choice whether you take his eye or you take out the limb, right, for the damage that's done, or he can pay kofar. Rather, there's only one solution. The only solution is kofar, meaning that you have to pay only compensation. Therefore, the Gemara knows, ayin tachat ayin, comes to teach me about nezek, comes to teach me about damage, and damage means eye for an eye is not literally an eye for an eye, but rather the monetary compensation for the loss caused by the damage to the eye. Okay, we'll stop over here.